and welcome to episode 25 of Investigating the Post Office Scandal, The Compensation Crunch. It is Friday the 9th of December 2022. My name is Rebecca Thompson and I wrote the first investigation into the Post Office Horizon IT scandal for Computer Weekly back in 2009.
Hello, my name is Nick Wallace and I am the author of the book, The Great Post Office Scandal, out now in updated paperback, ebook and audiobook format.
This scandal came about because the Post Office rolled out a piece of accounting and retail software called Horizon into every post office branch in the country and made its sub-postmasters legally responsible for the figures it produced. Unfortunately, Horizon didn't work and rented faulty accounts, which sub-postmasters were criminally prosecuted over.
Now, to date, 83 people have had their convictions overturned, but many hundreds haven't. Many hundreds more were suspended or sacked and forced to put their own money into holes that the IT system created in their accounts. A statutory inquiry chaired by a retired judge, Sir Wynne Williams, has been set up.
Yesterday, the inquiry had a special hearing about the various schemes and channels set up to compensate sub-postmasters, which includes the historical shortfall scheme, the overturned conviction scheme, and the new group litigation compensation scheme. There is also another one just set up and just announced by the Post Office, a scheme to pay compensation for the income lost during postmasters' suspensions.
Yeah, they used to get suspended without pay arbitrarily on the whim of their contracts managers back in the bad old days. Before we went into the hearing, which was being held at the International Dispute Resolution Centre in central London, we had a chat with some of the sub-postmasters who were outside holding a banner saying, SOS, support our sub-postmasters.
This seems to be the day where things, we hope, are going to move in the right direction in respect to compensation and full and final settlement for everybody, hopefully.
What do you want to hear? What do you want to happen?
Just to tell us when it's going to be finally over, isn't it? You know, I've waited 12 years and just to get it out of his heads and carry on with his life as normal as we can and just give us a break sort of thing, you know, we've just had enough.
I've come very, very angry today. I just feel like we're not getting anywhere. I feel like they keep promising things and they don't deliver. And I feel like we've just had enough. I know we all have to be very civil in there, but I think if all the claimants had to say something today, I think there'd be a lot of loud voices and a lot of colourful language. And I want Sir Wynne to do something extreme today to really show them that they can't be getting away with actions like this, or no action really.
I'm open for some answers from Wynne Williams today. I haven't had any interim payment even up till now, and there's no offer on the table yet either.
So nothing explaining why, no development at all?
The only thing is they're saying that my particular case was not intrinsic to Horizon. The Southwark Crown Court seemed to think different, CCRC seemed to think different, my solicitors seem to think different, and they're still putting up a case as to why I should be entitled to compensation along with the others.
Is there anything in particular that you expect to happen today? What do you expect to see come out of the hearing?
I'm hoping to hear from Sir Wynne Williams as to some sort of final resolution, conclusion, and put my mind at ease, so get this stress and constant pain, continuing pain, I can put it to red.
That was Richard Walker, Alison Hall, Simon Cameron, and lastly, Parmod Kalia, one of the three people who the Post Office are refusing to give any compensation to, despite having their convictions quashed.
And that's because they also gave false confessions along with their guilty pleas. They say they were advised to do this to mitigate against a prison sentence, not that it helped Parmod. But the Post Office seems to be saying that this means their conviction was not reliant on Horizon evidence, which is the grounds for its successful appeal.
Yeah, the Post Office are now calling these the public interest only cases, and it is a legal technicality, but it's one on which lives can obviously change. Parmod is officially, formally an innocent man with no stain on his reputation, and a judge at Southwark Crown Court has told him as much. The fact his life has been ruined for 20 years is something the Post Office appears to think is not its problem. The Post Office has actually, as well as all these compensation schemes, by the way, Rebecca, the Post Office said in the, I think it was the last compensation hearing, that it's prepared to have its senior executives meet with individual sub-postmasters who have had their convictions quashed as a kind of restorative justice thing, which I think was an initiative which was suggested by David Enright at Howe & Co. But I bet you that Nick Reed wouldn't meet with Parmod in the current situation, because if he did, I doubt he'd be holding out against paying him any compensation.
Anyway, we haven't actually got to the actual hearing yet, so let's do that now.
Yes, we will get. We'll come back to Parmold because he did come up during the compensation hearing, and some of the sub-postmasters spoke about him afterwards. But yes, let's focus on what was said in the room, shall we?
Yes. So proceedings began with submissions from the post office and from the business department. Bays.
So it's fair to say that both the post office and Bays thought everything was all going pretty well. Kate Gallifant for the post office told Sir Wyn Williams that there had been 2,240 eligible applicants to their historical shortfall scheme. Now, this was for sub-postmasters who had not been convicted of any crime and who had not been part of the High Court litigation. 94% of those applicants had been offered money by the post office. That's going up to 95% by the end of the year, which is 5% off the government's 100% target for the end of the year. The total of the offers already made is £74 million. But the actual number of people who have accepted the offers is only 1,804, and the total sum handed over is £44.5 million, which makes the average amount accepted £24,667. Now, if all the offers currently made are eventually accepted, then the average amount rises to just over £35,000 per person, which, of course, proves what we thought was going on, which was that the post office are basically dealing, or have been dealing, with all the smaller claims first and leaving those who suffered life-changing problems waiting around the longest. Kate Gallifant also noticed that there had been expressions of interest from 230 late applicants to the Horizon Shortfall Scheme, of whom 93 had completed a form, 68 of those had been assessed. None of these had been formally accepted onto the scheme, but the post office didn't expect not to accept them. And this is the sort of madness that we were involved in yesterday. But the reasons for not accepting them seem so vague that one of the postmaster's barristers dryly noted that if they had been accepted by the time of yesterday's hearing, it would significantly reduce the 94% offer statistic that the post office seems so pleased with. So I don't know, but there is a suspicion that this is pretty artificial game playing by the post office. Of the 83 overturned convictions, 79 have received interim payments of around £100,000 each. One of those 83 didn't want any, and the remaining three are the category that Parmod falls into, the public interest only cases. Now, these cases are all with Hudgell's solicitors, and the status update on them is that they are going to independent mediation, which essentially means yet more delay. As for Bays, the business department, they were represented by the barrister Nick Chapman, who I'm afraid I managed to call Mark Chapman on Twitter yesterday, for which I apologise. Nick Chapman told the inquiry it was disappointed in the failure of the post office to complete its offers to historical shortfall scheme claimants by its deadline at the end of the year, which, let's not forget, is more than 2 years after the scheme officially closed. Mr. Chapman also spent some time essentially repeating what we found out on Wednesday about the group litigation order compensation scheme, or the GLO compensation scheme, for those in the Bates v. Post Office GLO, which took place at the High Court.
Yeah, so what was that scheme announcement on Wednesday?
Yes, sorry, GLO? We very nearly did this entire podcast without mentioning it, didn't we? Which, we should point out that on Wednesday, the new business secretary, Grant Shapps, tried to steal a PR advantage over this compensation hearing by announcing the detail of a scheme for postmasters who were involved in the epic Bates v. Post Office litigation, which went for two trials in 2018-2019 and ended with a resounding victory for the sub-postmasters. Now, this lot used to be known as the 555, but they are now technically the 492, as the 63 postmasters within that group who either have convictions to quash or who already have had their convictions quashed are excluded from the GLO compensation scheme. And this is possibly unfairly, according to one law firm, especially in the case of those who have yet to have their convictions quashed. But I think that's for another day. This GLO compensation scheme is actually a bit like the historical shortfall scheme, which has been run by the post office, except it's not run by the post office, and I personally hope to God it's fairer. It does have Lord Arbuthnot and Kevin Jones, MP, sitting on its advisory board. Now, both of these men are long-term campaigners for sub-postmasters. The GLO scheme isn't going to be up and running until the new year, which is a full 3 years after Alan Bates first invoiced the government for the money that he and his fellow claimants lost in legal fees whilst pursuing the post office for what was rightfully theirs through the courts.
OK, well, let's hear what the Sir Postmaster's barristers had to say in response to all of that. The first issue that arose was the apparent underpayment of people in the HSS scheme. Here, Tim Maloney for Hudgell Solicitors is talking us through the three cases, and there are only three, that have actually reached the stage of a so-called good faith meeting where offers have been debated and revised and decisions have actually been made. In each case, key aspects of people's claims were being missed.
Case one, and these are of course anonymised, sir, for obvious reasons. Case one initially received a net offer of £46,799.52 in December of 2021. Just after Hudgell Solicitors served evidence in relation to her case on the 7th of March of 2022. And then some 8 months later, on the 10th of November of this year, sir, she received a revised net offer of £140,126.37. And that, sir, is close to £100,000. And that difference, that significant difference, was accounted for by compensation for loss of earnings following resignation, which we say, sir, should have been a very obvious head of loss to have appreciated.
And so that I understand your criticism, am I right in thinking that when the lady presented her claim on her own, she hadn't identified a loss of earnings, but you would say there obviously must have been one, which the panel should have investigated. Is that the point?
Should have asked the question, basically, sir. There must have been.
Right.
Is what we'd say about that. And then case two, an offer of £3,752.26 in January of 22. That was simply a shortfall of £2,000 in associated interest. A good faith meeting took place in July of 2022, and the revised offer was received on the 17th of November, and that revised offer was greatly increased to £63,331.89, and that included compensation for losses arising from resignation and distress and inconvenience that had not been considered by the original panel. And then in case three, the applicant received a net offer of £21,691.23 in March of 2022, a good faith meeting in June of 22, and a revised offer of £34,862.61 on the 17th of November, the same day as case two and just a week after case one. And again, two heads of damage which were not present in the original claim were identified and proceeded with, and an increased offer made. And those are the only three examples we have, sir, of cases dealt with by Hudgell Solicitors which have proceeded to a good faith meeting, which of course is the next stage along from the offer, and then resulted in a decision on an offer. Not simply a revised offer, but a decision on an offer following that good faith meeting. There have been no other decisions on offers. And so each time there's been an upward revision of the offer when an offer has been made.
Mr. Maloney also raised issue with delays in accepting late claimants onto the scheme, delays in getting dates for good faith meetings. Across the board, everything seems to be moving extremely slowly, and Mr. Maloney said Hudgells did not know why. But the biggest threat to payments seemed to be the lack of resources to process applications.
Another issue that arose in Hudgell submissions, as well as during Howe & Co's evidence, was the huge issue of bankrupt postmasters. So across all three compensation schemes, great swathes of people's payments are being taken to pay their creditors. Mr. Maloney flagged one particularly shocking case where a postmaster had been awarded £259,000 in compensation, only to have £251,000 taken from them. So just getting £8,000 in as a result.
It's appalling.
It is just shocking. And both Hudgells and Howe & Co agreed on the answer to this. Bankrupt victims need to receive more money.
Yes, Hudgell suggested that they needed to have their debts paid and their bankruptcies, which were caused by the post office, annulled, and then they need to be paid a full and fair amount of compensation. The chair of the inquiry, Sir Wynne Williams, suggested he will consider taking his own legal advice on this question.
Last week, sort of through the postmasters, through the lawyers, we learned that some bankrupt postmasters, notably those in the GLO scheme, are getting just half of their interim payments. And yesterday we effectively learned that this problem is even more widespread than we thought and needs addressing quite urgently. So we'll see what the chair says about that, because it's obviously causing widespread distress at the moment.
Mr. Maloney was very pragmatic in the way he went about his submission to the inquiry yesterday. But after lunch, there was something of a gear change. Another representative of sub-postmasters, Ed Henry, stood up and made his submission. And I think it's fair to say, Rebecca, he had a very different style to Tim Maloney.
Yes, he did. It's really interesting, the different reactions in the room to Mr. Henry, for me, really demonstrated a bit of this sort of cultural divide between this room of sober and businesslike lawyers and civil servants, and then the postmasters, that they're all here to discuss, who were there in quite high numbers yesterday. During Mr. Henry's submissions, I think it was fair to say there were signs of what could be interpreted as slight impatience from some of the other lawyers. But when we spoke to postmasters afterwards, they'd loved it. He summed up for them the horrible situation so many of them are in, and he made them feel heard. And here's how he began.
There are two issues. The first is the continuing and inexcusable delay in delivering compensation to the wronged, to the innocent. And that will also include whether the awards proffered are even remotely approaching acceptability. The second, which is inextricably entwined with the first, is whether Poll will accept that it deliberately denied, obstructed, and delayed appellate rights, needlessly, unjustly, and wrongly prolonging the suffering of those that it had devastated, either by civil judgments and bankruptcy or criminal convictions. Wholly unjustified, iniquitous prolonging of suffering, which, without exaggeration, you might even compare to torture, because these are people who were destroyed by the legal system. As Professor Moorhead, in his evidence before you, expressed as long ago as February, his concern that this tragedy, these appalling injustices, had been facilitated and perpetrated by legal services. And to deny people their Article 6 rights, both as to contesting the charges against them, and that is beyond question, but then to suppress and bury the very exculpatory material, the very information that would allow them to go before a court and say, I was wrongly convicted, this judgment against me ought to be set aside, is a degree of wrongdoing of such magnitude that it is without precedent. And Bayes is also, as we have submitted, responsible. And we come to the buzzword, the slogan, full and fair compensation. Well, of course, sir, as you well know, no amount of money can right the wrong, undo the harm, and heal the wounds caused by these terrible events. Terrible is indeed a strong word, but it almost becomes an understatement, sir, if one adds to the appalling injustice of wrongful conviction or wrongful civil judgment a deliberate and malignant desire or policy to suppress the truth so that even the senior courts are deceived, so that these appellate rights, which are sacred in our system of justice, were effectively destroyed for years.
Now, that was just the curtain raiser. During his oration, Mr. Henry did waxed a little lyrical, but he also honed in on a new argument that the post office had deliberately denied the convicted sub-postmasters their human rights under Article 6 of the Human Rights Act. And this goes to the ability to have an appeal to a conviction in the soonest possible time. This does go back to the post office's cover-up of their potentially false prosecutions, which was incontrovertibly alerted to the post office's board and therefore the government in 2013. Mr. Henry asked the inquiry chair to make a decision about this point, this specific point as to whether or not the post office might have been in contravention of Article 6 of the sub-postmaster's human rights. And his point was that the post office acted so abominably, it makes the current process-driven, lengthy and somewhat niggly back and forth over categories of compensation claim and how they might be settled a poor reflection on what actually is a ringing injustice, which should, I think, in Mr. Henry's eyes, be a stain on not just the post office and the government, but the justice system and indeed Britain itself. Here is how he ended.
This is not benevolence. This is not Lady Bountiful giving alms. This is to restore people to the position they would have been and might have been, what they would have achieved. A bright 19-year-old, Tracy Felstead, who lost her entire adult life through the post office's malevolence. So you can't just give them a sort of mechanical or merely functional sum based on a box-ticking exercise. There has to be a qualitative assessment of these people's potential, the assets that they lost, and the opportunities that they were denied, all because of this malignant culture of secrecy and non-disclosure. And those two questions, unanswered, will continue to hang over the head of those who represent the post office, but more importantly, those who are the directing mind of the post office. And it is a profound shame to this country that even after all that has been done wrong, that silence, even today, persists. Those are our submissions, sir.
That was Ed Henry. The final barrister we heard from was Sam Steen, representing Howe & Co. He talked at length about that bankruptcy issue, and he also gave us a sense of what his clients are suffering. This clip is quite long, but it's worth having a listen because it gives a good sense of the continued human impact of delays.
Joanne Fulger. Christmas is going to be a struggle. Christmas dinner will be microwaved. Disappointment after disappointment is making a hole so big that I feel I'll never be whole again. Shala Ahmed, Faisal Aziz. We are worried if this winter we would be able to heat our home and serve meals to our large family at the same time. The interim payment we were given will only last a couple of months, considering the rising energy bills and inflation overall. He discusses his older children who have started to hide their needs. His 13-year-old daughter had a tear in her school shoe. She didn't tell us about it and decided to glue it in order to save money. Peter Worsfall, he said in July he'd not been able to repay his 94-year-old mother. This month, December, he says that he has received interim compensation and it has helped pay some debts. He is concerned that receiving compensation in dribs and drabs means that he and other sub-postmasters cannot invest and receive income to look forward to an old age. He has effectively lost 20 years of business. Importantly, he instructs that the compensation he received did not touch the sides of what he has lost. Rendra Bajaj. My current financial position is worsening day by day, and the whole cost of living is peeling me off a cliff edge. I worry constantly how I'll be able to afford the bills. I can only pay off nominal amounts of the debt, and I've been told it will take me 100 years to pay it all back. Mentally draining, stressful, and exhausting. Robert Thompson. I've been fighting 5 years to get my name cleared. In that time, I've only had one payment, which was at the very beginning when this case was getting looked into. Does no one realise the financial strain you're putting on me and my family? James Withers. There appears to be no thought or compassion for the victims, from them and for how most of the victims are actually struggling. They seem to make it their mission to delay the outcome as much as they possibly can. Victor Price. I have for many years had mental health issues, and I'm not aware of until I had lost everything. We agreed to sell everything and just move into our caravan. This we did for 2 years. We've been renting ever since. We don't want charity. We just want some form of compensation to make up for the years we're paid in rent. Thomas Brown. The compensation process has been extremely unreliable. I was simply told that my case was complicated and they would be in touch. It once again left me in a state of financial difficulty. The government has agreed that the bankruptcy should be paid back in full. The only people in disagreement were the trustees. However, because I'm in such a desperate financial state, I had no choice but to accept the 51% I was offered. This had a detrimental impact on my mental health, as it dragged up all the past trauma caused by the post office over the years. That Thomas English. The fact that I, as a retired police officer and former Royal Marine, could have my reputation trashed by the management of a supposed organisation that was a pillar of the establishment. The thing really eats you up.
Sam Steen there. So overall, yesterday was perhaps a bit frustrating. It had the slight feel of Groundhog Day. You really want to believe there are people in bays in the post office who are working hard to get people compensation, to get them out of quite dire situations with urgency. And clearly there is work going on, things are happening. But at the same time, we were being told yesterday that there just isn't the will in these organisations to get things done quick enough. You hear about postmasters only eating every other day. They can't heat their homes. Their children are hiding holes in their shoes. People are constantly getting sick. More people are dying. We haven't mentioned yet Baljit Sethi, who worked night shifts for 15 years after his IVA and is now surviving on the state pension. He's been waiting nearly 3 years for compensation. Yesterday we got the strong sense that those who have been paid are getting amounts that are far too small, and we get big announcements the day before hearings that seem designed to distract and divert from these criticisms, so it's quite hard not to be cynical about it. Earlier we mentioned what the post office are calling the public interest only set of cases, those of Parma Kalia, Vipin Patel and Natejo Adedayo. They were effectively bullied into pleading guilty by the post office. They've had their convictions overturned, which the post office didn't argue with, but it is refusing to pay them any compensation at all. It's now going to independent mediation. After the hearing, former sub-postmaster Wendy Buffery said that she'd particularly like to see something happening on these cases.
All of them are in the same boat because they were told to make up something to say where the money's gone. And to then hold that against them after they've done that is absolutely appalling, and it shouldn't be allowed to happen. You know, it's not against the public interest. What they did, they've ruined them, and by doing that, you know, and then to stand there and say, oh, it's not our fault, is just wrong.
Nikki Arch added that the success of yesterday's hearing will only become evident once we hear what Sir Wynne has to say about it all.
That would dictate a lot of things, whether this inquiry is actually going to have any powers at all, and if anyone's actually listening, because otherwise we're all going to land up back in court again. And to me, he said, you know, the base committee said for me, then the GLO claims will go in by next spring. Well, that's 2023. This happened to me in 2000. So we're 23 years on, and then we'll decide what we want to debate, because they didn't say they're going to agree a claim next spring. They said they will accept them. So then they will argue, because we know how it all works, they will argue for a couple of years as to what they want to do about what you've presented to them. And then it'll be 2025, and we'll all be back here discussing the same old rubbish. Mm. It's either Sir Wynne Williams makes the compensation happen or we're kicking the can down the road. It's one way or the other, and we're not going to know until the report's there. So was today progressive? Who knows? Because we haven't heard anything new, unfortunately. Yeah. And the same with the meeting yesterday with Grant Shapps. Don't know what that announcement was all about yesterday. I don't know what it achieved.
It was a trying to preempt today by saying, look, we're doing something,
what we could have said is, nothing's happened since July, so we'll see you all tomorrow, and save all that work.
That was Nikki Arch. I know I need to keep some critical distance on all of this, and maybe I am getting a bit too involved having spoken to many of the protagonists, but I must admit I left the hearing myself feeling very, very frustrated. I can't imagine how so many of the sub-postmasters feel. But thankfully, former sub-postmaster Lee Castleton was on hand as ever to give me his perspective.
Oh, God, so much going on and so many things that we don't get to see, so many things that really are out in the open, even though everyone talks about learning lessons and being open and transparent. It just seems as though I just don't understand why it has to be so complicated with three schemes. I just don't understand it.
Well, there's more than three schemes now, isn't there? You've got the potential suspended postmasters compensation scheme. You've got this idea that there'll be some kind of restorative justice scheme going on. And then there's no one in control of it either.
It just seems as though things have been passed between different departments, different budgets, different people getting involved. And I just worry that, you know, we've got a group of people that have been through an awful lot, as you well know. You know, 20 years of beating your head against a wall. Is it really fair now to start splitting people up and start making it really complicated? I don't want it to be complicated. I just want it to finish, really.
What did you make of the three approaches from the three core participant barristers today? You had Mr. Maloney, who was very pragmatic, talking about detail, talking about moving things forward in a pragmatic sense. You had Ed Henry, who sort of was invoking Article 6 of the Human Rights Act and talking about the egregious wrongs and the need for a higher level of compensation to be opened up and thought about. And then you had, I suppose you could say, Sam Steen sort of picking away between the two, really, but also talking about the need for properly funded representation as well. I mean, they are three very disparate kind of approaches, aren't they? Which again speaks to the lack of cohesion here. But which one sort of resonated with you?
Well, to be honest, all three. I like the approach of, you know, Tim Maloney. I understand it completely. I get it, you know, and it's very, very important. I also, obviously, Ed, the human factor, the cause, the damage, everything that's going on, and do we really want to go down that road of prolonging all of that? No. God, no. And then finally, you know, Sam broke down everything into smaller parts and really explained the underpinnings and the need for clarity. And that's the whole point of this, is for clarity. We just all want to end up in the right direction. One of the big worries from speaking to other people in the group is that we go down this road blindly, we follow lots of different routes, and everyone ends up not in the right place. Because it's been a long fight. I know I keep saying
No, that. Listen, I understand, and you know, no one feels it more than you. Do you think that the post office are acting in good faith? They're saying the right things. But as I was speaking to one of the solicitors in the room representing sub-postmasters, and he said, why are they taking so long? They don't need to be taking so long. What is the reason? We haven't been given a reason. And Tim Maloney actually said that on the record, didn't he? We haven't been given a reason why there have been so many delays. Do you think the post office are playing silly buggers or what?
Well, let me tell you something, and this really resonates with me and it really upsets me. 555 claims were assessed by Freeths in 2019. Every single one of those claims was done on headlines. Everyone knows exactly where that stands. That was hours, hundreds and hundreds of hours of work on their behalf. Are we really in a different position from those claims then? Could this not all just be rolled out as saying, in 2019 everyone was in that position, in 2022 everyone's in that position, pick up the shortfall between and just go forward? Is it really any more difficult than that?
I must admit, I did lose patience at one stage when I was sitting there looking at what must have been 100 people in the room in front of me, most of whom were lawyers, all of whom were getting paid. Again, and they couldn't sort it out. They can't sort it out, and I don't know why that is.
The reason why they can't sort it out is because, on one hand, you've got the people defending the victims that are looking to make sure they get the absolute best outcome for every individual, and that's expensive. On the other hand, you've got a group of lawyers that are looking to just make it all go away as easily and quickly and inexpensively as possible. It's never going to be anywhere met in between. There's just never going to be that. It's going to be who pulls hardest. And I don't want to be in that fight. You know, the bun fight's over for me. That was in the GLO. That was in the litigation. This now is, this should be the easily, you know, understandable, comprehensible end to it all. But it seems as though it's just going to go on and on and on.
And yet you hear that, yeah, and you hear those heartbreaking stories that Sam Steen, that litany from his clients about what they're suffering, how they are, you know, going to be microwaving their Christmas dinners this year. They're not going to put the heating on. They are still suffering. They still don't have what they need just to get by, let alone be put back to where they were. it's really difficult for someone who's a layperson standing there watching it, just going, I just don't understand. I mean, we're 3 years on from the group litigation conclusion, we're 2 years on from the first convictions being quashed, we're still sitting in a room with a bunch of lawyers going, this is a mess.
Would you stand at the bottom of a very steep hill and take the easy way out? You know, are these people that are sat microwaving meals, struggling with debts, really taking difficult life decisions on the back of having been defunded, really, just taking out every penny away from their lives? Would you not then say, well, if that gets me by, if that small amount of money, that little bit that they may well offer in the first instance, if that takes away that pain short term and we can build on that, would you take it? Yes.
That's the concern,
probably,
isn't it? Yeah.
That's probably where this is going. Yeah. And I hope that the victim's barristers can defend against that. But I worry, I really do worry that that's not going to be the case.
Lee Castleton. So yesterday, Rebecca, I think in summary, it was been a quite a difficult day. Both of us separately were given some devastating news about the health of two sub-postmasters, which I think it's fair to say we both found quite upsetting. It rather brought home to both of us that this is a zero-sum game. Time is running out. People have had their lives blighted, and unless things speed up, they will die in poverty and hurting.
Yeah, speaking to the postmasters, it is just increasingly difficult not to find the whole situation a bit depressing. Hearing from multiple people about how hard their lives are, both directly via their lawyers, how they're getting sick, it increasingly feels like they're not just victims of the original scandal, but victims of this strange bureaucratic scandal, this sort of mess where the real life human effects of these delays is too distant from and apparently not fully understood by those responsible for managing these compensation schemes. That brings us to the end of this episode and our last of the year. Thank you so much for listening to our coverage of this inquiry so far. Don't forget to like, subscribe and follow so you can get each new episode for free as soon as it drops.
This podcast is entirely funded by your crowdfunding donations, for which we're very grateful. If you would like to give us a few quid, you will be helping us make this, and you will also be signed up to the Post Office Scandal Secret email, which collects everything going on at the inquiry and the wider scandal and can sometimes include some interesting gossip. If you want to do that, all you have to do is go to postofficescandal.uk/donate and you will be automatically signed up.
Investigating the Post Office Scandal is produced and presented by Rebecca Thompson and Nick Wallace, with sage advice and support from Whistledown Productions.
We will be back in January, and so will the inquiry. So from all at Investigating the Post Office Scandal podcast, with a special mention to our website guru, Andrew Neil, have a very Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year. And sorry if we've not brought much in the way of good tidings this episode.
Indeed. All right. Thank you very much, Rebecca. See you next year. Take care.
Bye.